Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From Salt River Fields to Talking Stick in Scottsdale, Arizona, this is D-Backs Podcast. We are the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and we are here at the D-Backs Spring Training Facility, the jewel of Major League Baseball in the springtime, really the Grand Budapest Hotel of camp complexes. And camp is officially in full swing with pitchers and catchers all here. Position players due in today as we record this on Tuesday. And the first full squad workout scheduled for tomorrow on Wednesday. Of course, we've been busy with players working out here really since the new year. But now, everyone is official. Welcome to Episode 11. I'm Steve Berthume as the Valley blooms with baseball and the Cactus League takes over the greater Phoenix area for the next 6 weeks or so. This is the time of year when the Valley here in Arizona really does feel like industry headquarters with so many major league clubs so centrally located in this beautiful part of the country. The Commissioner Rob Manfred, in fact, was here today speaking to the Diamondbacks and Rockies players. If only the Oscars had gone so well. A lackluster, to put it kindly, ceremony
Lady Gaga
Sunday
was
night.
Good.
She was great, yeah. Here today, a man often referred to as the Benedict Cumberbatch of the ballpark, the radio voice of the Diamondbacks, the Earl of Grantham, the Gubna, it's Greg Schulte.
Benedict Cumberbatch, huh?
Yeah, did you see Imitation Game?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Really good, really good.
I've heard things about him.
Also alongside, he was not nominated Sunday night for either Achievement in Sound Mixing or Achievement in Sound Editing. Surprisingly did get consideration for Achievement in Costume Design, but went home empty-handed. Producer, engineer, man about town, it's Leo Gilmartin.
Yeah. Just How come missed. You weren't nominated?
There's politics involved.
It always is.
I'd rather not talk about it. Sensitive subject.
I often think of you two guys as kind of a Julie Andrews-Lady Gaga combo.
That was good, though.
She was good. That, for me, I watched the whole awful show.
Do we want to know which one's which?
Well, I'll leave that up to you two. That was one of the highlights for me. Lady Gaga, when you get her out of the meat dress and, you know, put some clothes on her, she can really sing.
The trumpets were a little on the, but anyway, yeah, I mean, it was.
That was nice.
It was spectacular, the whole thing. And then Julie Andrews comes out at the end. So
yeah, and she looked like she was tearing up. It was a nice moment there.
And there weren't many nice moments in the Oscars.
Just give me Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, please. Just let them do every award show for the next 5-6 years. They're always great together.
Or bring back Bob Hope.
And I felt bad for the How I Met Your Mother guy, Neil Patrick Harris, who was really trying hard. But you wonder, like, when they write these jokes.
Show's too long.
Well, that's always been an issue. So is this one, for matter of fact. But
speaking of,
I wasn't.
But when they write these awful jokes, who says, "Yeah, let's go with that"? They're terrible.
One person sits in a room, and then they walk the jokes up lock and key.
Yeah, that was one of the jokes, in fact.
And they open it up. Yeah, I know.
Uncle, man. I mean, you miss Billy Crystal. I mean, you can't. If you're going to host the Oscars, you can't do it for 25 years like Bob Hope did back in the day. You know, Billy Crystal had a great run. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, I think, are awesome. And Neil Patrick Harris, I thought, tried his best, but boy, it was really a flat show.
Well, any Oscars coming up for the Diamondbacks this year?
I see what you did there. Nice work. Maybe we should have an Oscar, a D-back Oscar show. Maybe we should have thought of that. I mean, best hitter, Goldie. You know,
We'll come up with some stuff and have it at the end of the year.
I was sad for Michael Keaton. I wanted him to win an Oscar for Birdman, which I thought was an amazing movie. That's my own take.
It's good that he got up on stage when.
Yeah, that was neat. And the movie
and
won
the
a lot of awards.
Thing at the end.
But I kind of wish he had won because I thought he was sensational. But that's another show. Now that spring training is officially here and officially fully open for business. We will downshift our format a bit here on this show, try and bring you as many D-backs guests and discussions as we can. Sit up here where we are with great access to all the players and the coaches and the staff. They are right outside our umpires room here. And Leo, once again, is ensconced in the restroom of the umpires dressing room. I'm told this, Leo, is our last show.
I was gonna say, final episode from the bathroom.
From these luxurious circumstances. Now, next week we move to the radio booth, right?
Correct. Yeah. Here at Salt River.
In fact, our first broadcast is a week from today.
Exactly.
Leo said 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Again, that's the Arizona State game, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. So, man, we'll be rocking and rolling here in a week.
Yeah.
This will be a pitching-heavy show today for the most part. They all are here working out. As we said, position players are all in today. They start working out officially tomorrow. The pitchers have been working out since last Friday. We will talk to Chase Anderson on this show, and we'll talk to pitching coach Mike Harkey on this show. We will also set the Wayback Machine for the new hit segment that is sweeping the country. Hey, Gubna, where are we going on Hey Gub this week?
We're going back all the way to 2011. Next to last game of the season, Ryan Roberts at the plate.
It was a good run.
It was.
So all that ahead on this episode 11. We're going to get to our first guest in a moment here. First, we're coming off, guys, what I thought was a terrific fan fest on
great.
Sunday at Chase Field, the 11th annual Subway D-backs Fan Fest. The roof was open. We had, for the most part, sunny skies. It was very comfortable in there. We had a great turnout, great question and answer sessions, I thought, with the players and the fans. Bronson Arroyo and his band played. Mm-hmm. Aaron Hill was up there. Mark Trumbo, AJ
Pollock. Can't believe they still don't have a name for that band.
Yeah, I when I tweeted out some pictures, I just put the players' band.
Yeah.
But, boy, they can really sing. Bronson is, he's almost professional.
Derek got up there and did a rendition of Sweet Caroline.
What was your, Gub, what was your take on FanFest?
Good. I think all of us went in there not knowing what to expect on a Sunday. It went 4 hours. I thought it was a very fast 4 hours, but I think the fans were able to move around, go to the different booths and buy memorabilia if they want. And I saw a lot of people buying things.
Old D-backs bobbleheads. Yep. Those are great, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And as you said, we had the interviews. JJ did a set. You did a couple. I did one with the front office and Chip Hales. So it was, I think it was good. And we all did a radio bit there at the end. But, first time on a Sunday, I think they'll try and go back to Saturday. But for a Sunday, I was pretty impressed with all the people that came out.
It's funny. I actually had a lot of fans come up to me and tell me they were glad it was on a Sunday because people have to work sometimes on Saturdays, and Sunday seemed to be a good day. We'll see how that works out. Leo, what were your impressions?
Well, echoing what you guys said, it was really well attended. It was a fun day. The thing that struck me was how into it, how accessible the players were. I think they were very game for almost anything. The guys up on the stage at the Q&As, they had the photo booths and stuff like that. I thought they were very accessible. I thought they were really good sports about the whole day, and which makes it that much more special.
You know, guys, we're lucky in that regard because there are almost all good people on this team. We don't deal with any prima donnas.
And I'll be honest with you, in 17 years of covering this ball club, and Leo, you've been around this long, we've had only maybe a handful that you'd think, that's not the Diamondback.
Very few.
I mean, just – really good over the years.
And those very few, they didn't stay around very
long.
No,
they didn't. They were gone pretty quick.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate. Yeah. That's been my experience here. And I've interviewed professional athletes my whole life. And this is a great situation. We're very lucky here. So thanks to all of you out there who showed up at FanFest, and we hope to see you again next year. I thought it was a terrific event and a really fun day. And I think you're absolutely right. It did kind of fly by.
It did. I mean, it was fast.
Didn't feel like 4 hours at all. So thanks for the turnout, fans. Great job as always, and we look forward to next year. Now let's talk about, Gub, where we are here. We've seen pitchers and catchers officially, using finger quotes, throw for a few days now. Position players start tomorrow. The thing that jumps out at me, having been here almost every day, is that there is a lot more pitching here than people realize. And I mean national. I'm talking national media. I talked to my friends at ESPN. They're doing the bus tour. Bus tour, by the way, not even coming here this year.
Yeah.
Everyone's overlooking the Diamondbacks. And
that's fine.
It's great. I think it's great. They won't see us coming, as Dave Stewart says. But I think my impression here is there's a lot more pitching here than people realize. And the biggest difference for me from last year's team to this year's team, two things really. One, the injuries. You hope that's the biggest thing. But most importantly, in watching camp so far this year, The thing that jumps out to me is last year when you needed a body to start a game, you had to go to Mike Bolsinger and guys like that.
You're talking about a call-up, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay, we need a guy to start Thursday. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll give Bolsinger a run here. And he did his best, and you hope you get five innings out of him. This year, you're going to have a whole number of guys to choose from if you get in that spot, and they're all young, they all throw hard, they all have big upside. There's a lot more depth here and a lot more options.
Tony La Russa came off the field that first day, and you and I were sitting in the room, and he was conducting his interview with the media, and he said there were five groups of three, 15 pitchers that threw the first day. They were all starting pitchers. He said, I did not see one pitcher out there that could not have a successful run in the major leagues as a starter.
It's one thing to put a list together, and we've done that on this show, but when you go watch them, wave after wave come in to throw their bullpens, all young guys, all throwing low, mid, high, upper 90s, then it really hits you how much is here. They're in a very, very good position, I think. And I think they've been very pleasantly surprised by some of the things they've seen so far.
I think
it's
some good young lefties, too, you know, to go along with all these right-handers. We've been impressed with Lopez. You know, Trevor Cahill is a completely different Trevor Cahill this year. They've changed everything about him. He and Randy had a pretty good discussion in that first session the first day they threw. Randy was very animated getting his point across. So the units in here are helping. But, you know, we mentioned Chase Anderson. We mentioned a guy who last year pitched much, much better than his no-win record would indicate, Vidal Nuno. Nobody ever mentions this guy. All he did last year was pitch effectively and kept his club in the ballgame.
And he's going to really have to battle to get a rotation spot this year. Yeah. The competition.
Young Robbie Ray, Randall Delgado, Daniel Hudson. You got all these guys. Hellickson, Kolmetter. The guys they got from the Red Sox and De La Rosa and Webster.
Yep.
So you can just keep going, 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 and going.
And then you're not even talking about the quote-unquote big three
right.
who are close, Bradley, Belair, and Shipley. A couple of things just from my very untrained eye standing, because we could stand right behind home plate and watch these guys throw. Daniel Hudson's throwing the ball hard.
He threw it hard before he got hurt.
Right.
And the velocity, I think, might be a little bit higher.
Yes, I was going to say that. I'm glad you did.
Than what it was originally.
Like, you're standing back there. I don't have a gun on this, but I bet that was 96, 97. Because it's different. It's different than the other guys.
Yeah.
And you can see that with your naked
eye
just
standing
there. Yes, it makes that sound. Yeah. As you mentioned Lopez, and Tony La Russa did too, I think they're really impressed with his command. We mentioned how young Cuban pitchers are often a little more polished or further along because of the level of competition at which they play, and Lopez played in the Cuban Pro League for 3 years, so he might be a little more advanced than your average 22-year-old. But the thing that jumped out to Tony, and you can see it, is the command. He's throwing hard, but he's hitting the corners. It's all right there. It's right to the glove. You can see the command is there.
And the good thing is, too, Bert, on all these guys we're mentioning, a lot of these guys have got options. So if there's a battle and you don't want to lose a guy who maybe doesn't have an option, you know, you can send somebody down who does, and you've got all this wiggle room, which is tremendous. And as you said, if somebody goes down now, you're not going to be afraid to call up whoever you want to call up because they all look like they're going to be able to contribute.
And you mentioned Robbie Ray. He's the other name that the coaches always bring up to us, that a guy that has jumped out to them. He's really throwing the ball well.
He was highly touted in Washington. The player that came over in the Fister deal, that was the guy they wanted. So three teams in 3 years, but there's something there.
Well, this is a guy, as you mentioned, that was traded for Doug Fister, who is going to be a free agent coming up next year. Mm-hmm. Doug Fister is going to be a $150 million guy.
He's good.
So that's what they thought of Robbie Ray, and now he's here in camp. I had a chance to chat with so many players at FanFest, and one of them was Braden Shipley. And I had watched him throw a bullpen Friday, tweeted out some pictures of it, and then talked to him Sunday. I said, how'd that bullpen go? Because it was his first one, quote-unquote, official. And it's funny, he got this big smile, and he said, boy, you know, I went out there, I get the ball, I go step on the mound, I'm up there on the mound, I'm on the rubber, and I look over, and he says to me, and there's Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan and Dave Stewart and Joe Carter and Randy Johnson all standing watching me throw. He said, I didn't know where the ball was going for the first 5 minutes. I was just like, holy cow, this is unbelievable. And then he said he settled down and he felt normal again. But those first few pitches, he said he didn't know where he was based on that murderer's row of baseball
it's
eyes
impressive.
Watching him. And when you're here to see them all lined up in a row, and as you mentioned, Randy Johnson, he's not just here hanging around. He's talking to these these guys. He's up on the pitcher's mound with them.
And you mentioned Tony La Russa, too. We've been talking about Tony. He's out here. He's very visible. He's walking, accessible to the fans. They're getting a lot of autographs. He's talking with the fans, mincing in with the crowd and having a good time. So, but observing nonetheless. And, you know, that's the important thing right there. But if you want to get a chance to talk to a Hall of Famer, maybe get a chance for an autograph, he's out there for you.
You know, and he's got his nose pressed right up to the glass. He sees everything. But you're absolutely right about that. It's not a situation where he's Bear Bryant up in the tower. He's walking around with the fans, you're right, taking pictures, signing autographs. He's very accessible. He's very out there.
He's like a new daddy or a new grandpa with all this, you know, he's watching all of these kids.
And I think that really speaks volumes for the organization because the bottom line is that his name is all over this thing. And we know what his name means in this game. And I think that really bodes well for the future. He's going to make sure this is a success. We hope this show is a success as well. It's time to bring in our first guest.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Mike Harkey back with the Diamondbacks as the pitching coach and back with us here on D-backs podcast. I'm going to guess that you've been impressed by what you've seen so far because there's a lot to look at.
Yeah, it's actually been a real fun camp so far. I mean, we have a lot of interesting decisions to make, and this makes for fun coaching because we have a lot of nice young arms.
You were telling me before we went on the air here, 34 pitchers you're looking at in camp here. What was it, 2013 Yankees?
2013 Yankees, we had 67 guys. Yeah, Brian Cashman was leaving no stone unturned.
Well, in a sense, that's what they've done here, right? I mean, if you're going to look for just pick a number, five guys, it's better to look among 15 or 18 than six or seven.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I couldn't be happier with what we have in camp right now. I mean, we have a lot of open spots. Guys understand that. But since the first day of catch, I mean, it guys are competing. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty nice. I mean, I think a week before we had bullpens, and I had 24 bullpens week before spring training. So guys are here. Guys are hungry.
I want to ask you about individual guys, but first, what's most impressed you so far about what you've seen?
Well, just the quality of stuff. And we're understanding we're just looking at bullpens, and tomorrow we'll have batting practices, but command of stuff. I mean, it's quality stuff, but guys are throwing it where they want to throw it, and that's probably what's impressed me the most about this camp. And it's the hardest thing to do is not get too excited because hitters will dictate, you know, where pitchers are and, you know, what level they're at right now.
Before you start getting on the individuals, bro, let me ask you a question. How do you find – in spring training games, how do you find all the innings for all of the pitchers? Because not only do you have a lot of starters, you have a lot of relievers. How do you find all of these innings for these guys to throw? A lot of B games?
Well, we're doing something I haven't seen done in, geez, probably 15 years. We have two B games, which will be played at 10 in the morning. And just so we can accommodate a lot of the guys.
Ah, see, so you've been asking that question for weeks. Yeah. What are they going to do?
You know, teams of –
because you want to see them.
Right. I mean, but if you look at spring training games have gone up. You know, we're up to 30-something games in spring training now. You know, when I played, it was 20 games of spring training, so they had to add, you know, 5 or 10 B games just to accommodate, you know, the extra innings. But, you know, this will be great because now we can look at more pitchers and give them more innings and get a better look at them.
And, Mike, not only that, you're also looking at a lot of catchers who are going to have to team with these pitchers.
Yeah.
Maybe you haven't seen them.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, we have open tryouts. I mean, it's pretty amazing. But, I mean, the quality is probably what's the best. I mean, Tony, Stu, Dijon, I mean, they've done an outstanding job and getting a really good return for what we gave away. And it's exciting to see.
And suddenly the system is restocked, yeah. All high upside young guys. They all throw hard. It's interesting. Let's sort of go down guy by guy here, and I know the fans want to hear about individual players. And I think in terms of your job, it's a good place to start might be Trevor Cahill, because I was reading where you've been working with Trevor really all winter long in California. Can you tell us about what you guys did together and how that went and where he is right now?
Well, the process, you know, well, kind of a general blueprint kind of started when we sent him down to AAA, and he wanted to work on some things, so we kind of dealt with some real basic stuff. But a more overhauled mechanical fix started in beginning or middle of January.
So he would drive up to see you?
Yeah, he came to see
California.
He came to see me. He drove all the way from San Diego and met me at Cal State Fullerton. And we started, actually I videotaped him a couple of times with my phone and just kind of gave him an idea on where I think his best slot is.
Which is more over the top, right?
Which is more over top, which is something closer to what he had when he was in Oakland. You know, and I just think, you know, coming from Oakland, Trevor tried to change some things and kind of make himself a better pitcher as far as a sinker, not really understanding that his stuff was plenty good enough when he got here. And it's not all his fault. I mean, what happens is sometimes as pitchers, we try to do too much. I mean, I look at myself when I signed as a free agent in Colorado in 94. I says, you know what? I was a four-seam pitcher. I said, oh, I better get myself a two-seamer. And I tried to
come up with
a two-seamer and got away from my strength. Yeah. And my two-seamer was going hit out of the ballpark more than my four-seamer. So understanding who you are as a pitcher, you know, we all want to get better every year. And Trevor was a young guy doing a lot of different things at a young age. And now he's understanding that he's, you know, that hopefully less is more. Yeah.
So he's right now more over the top before his arm, because we always hear with Trevor all last year, really the last 2 years, release point and arm slot, mm-hmm. trying to find something that works. So now this year he's more over the top.
Yeah.
How does that change his command and maybe the sinker with that?
Well, I mean, we hope that it does change his command, but I think by giving him a slot that's our biggest thing is easier to repeat. That's what we want. We want to give him a swing that's easier to – I mean, not a swing, but a delivery that's easier to repeat that gives him a better chance to make more pitches in consecutive.
So a repeatable delivery leads to more consistency.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's it. But the other part of it, he's got to work on the mental part is going to be on him, you know, to go out there and trust it and stick with it. I mean, I think that's the hardest thing is, you know, it's easy now. Because there's no real feedback other than what you see with a glove. But hitters will tell you whether or not it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm super optimistic with Trevor, thinking that what he's doing right now is going to – it can only help him.
Right.
You know, because
– it's kind of like he hit the bottom and now everything is looking up, hopefully.
Yeah, and sometimes that's what you need with pitchers. Pitchers have to – you as a pitching coach – sometimes the easiest way to get to a guy is to let him come to you and say, help me. You know,
because do they need to get to that point on their own?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I know I did. And you see a lot of guys, man. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, in order for them to be able to trust you, they have to be able to say, here, take me, help me. And sometimes that period is not overnight. You know, it takes a lot of trial and error, you know, but you know what? Trevor is a tremendous worker, and right now he's willing to do whatever it takes, and that's all I care about.
Move along here. When you were in New York, you saw a lot of Jeremy Hellickson, the good Jeremy Hellickson, mm-hmm. with Tampa Bay his rookie year. What are the Diamondbacks getting at him?
Well, what we're getting, and hopefully, is a healthy Jeremy Hellickson. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, I've seen this guy go out and compete, and, you know, he knows how to pitch. He has a very, very deceptive delivery. He's got a quick arm. Velocity-wise, I think his stuff sometimes plays harder than what it is, kind of like Coley. I mean,
because he's very low 90s.
Very low 90s, yeah. But you know what? He likes to pitch inside, and he uses all his pitches. And you know what? He's just a savvy guy. He's got great mound presence. And, you know, we hope that he fits into this rotation and provides a little more leadership.
I got to talk to him for a bit at FanFest, the first time I actually met him. And right away, Gub, I got the impression that this guy's going to go out there and compete. He sort of has that aura about him where you just sense he's going to battle you. Have you found that to be the case?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I watched him pitch in one of the hardest divisions in the baseball for 3 years. Man, you know what? You look at Tampa Bay pitchers, I mean, the development, you can tell that they were developed. And they all came out, and they were all basically very similar pitchers that were able to do a lot of different things. I mean, Hellickson, Cobb.
Archer, Matt Moore.
I mean, Shields, Garza, all sinker, change-up, good change-up guys. I mean, and you look at how much success all of those guys have had. I mean, it just shows that, you know, with good movement, good command, and a good off-speed pitch that you can have some success here.
Robbie Ray, he's the name that when we first got here and guys first started throwing that we heard buzzing around camp. This guy looks terrific. His MO has always been throws harder than a lot of lefties and consistent mid-90s or so. Good changeup, but the breaking ball hasn't quite been there. I know you've worked with him a little bit on a curveball grip. What's happening there with Robbie Ray?
Yeah, we're trying to get him a little bit more consistent grip that gives him a little bit more a better feel for it. But you know what? The biggest thing with Robbie is I wanted him to understand that none of this matters if the command of his fastball isn't where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. So I'd hate to jump to step three before he gets really good at step one and two. I mean, he's got a plus fastball, you know, and if he can command that fastball with his changeup, you're talking about him really not really needing a breaking ball, you know.
He can succeed with the two pitches.
Many a pitcher has.
Okay.
I mean, Coleman's a two-pitch pitcher.
Sure.
You know, and he throws his curveball just to show it, and that's basically where we're at. We just want him to get him a breaking ball that he can show hitters, a breaking ball that he can, you know, bounce every once in a while. But he's going to be able to, first thing first, throw it for a strike. You know, we don't really know how good it's going to be. But even if it's just mediocre, if he can throw it for a strike early in the count, behind an account every once in a while, then it's something that will develop and get better. But if he's constantly always having to use that pitch to get outs, it's going to be tougher for him. And just getting him to understand that and understanding that we have to stay kind of what I like to call elementary with it and just super, super easy and not try to be Kershaw breaking ball because it's not there yet.
Right. He's with his third organization in 3 years now. Does that make any kind of an impact on him, have you found at all?
Well, what I like to tell people that have been traded numerous times, that you understand, take it as a compliment.
Yes.
Because that means that there's teams that like you. You know, when you get released and nobody calls you, that's when I start worrying.
The two kids you get from Boston, De La Rosa and Webster, what can you tell? What have you seen so far? What do you like?
Well, again, it's all about stuff. We got two guys with big upside stuff. De La Rosa's had some success. He's got three plus pitches that he throws for strikes. Right now, we're just trying to refine his technique and his pitch sequence and stuff right now. And Webster has got an unbelievable sinker. It's in the mid 90s, but obviously what he's battled is command and control. And we want to make sure that, you know, we're not always harping on that with him. The biggest thing we stress to him is we're going to take advantage of his stuff and not try to leave it on the back burner because we're worried about throwing strikes. You know, we're going to let your stuff dictate how you pitch and, you know, make the most of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, a perfect example. I mean, and I hate to go, but Randy Johnson, he led the league in walks his first 2 years, and then all of a sudden, boom. And I'm not saying that Webster's not, but I'm saying that with all – you just don't go from being a guy that walks a lot of guys to be a guy that doesn't walk anybody.
Yeah.
You know, being able to pitch around those walks, and if you're giving up less hits, then it works the same.
His ball seems to move a tremendous amount.
Right.
It seems to have great natural movement to it, all his pitches, Allen Webster.
Exactly. So that's why we want to start his stuff in the zone at whatever velocity is his best stuff and let it do what it's going to do. and mainly try to teach him how to pitch more back and forth instead of in and out, so he's not aiming for the corners all the time, you know, but take a bigger piece of the plate because your stuff will play because of the movement.
Are you committed or is the organization committed? I know it's very early. To having De La Rosa and Webster in the rotation, because there's always been speculation with those guys when they were in L.A. and in Boston that maybe they might end up in the back end of bullpen somewhere down the road.
No, we're not committed. I mean, we're not committed to anybody, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we've called it an open – it's a competition. I mean, you know, aside from Kolmener and really Hellickson, I mean, there's basically three spots. And I mean, you look at Chase Anderson. He won 9 games.
Yeah.
But he knows he's not guaranteed anything. He has to come here and work and, you know, and have a good spring training. You know, so with that being said, I mean, you know, you have a lot of hungry guys out there. You know, a guy comes in here that's, you know, probably not really expected to do much and comes in and has a monster spring training, he could see himself staying with his team. I mean, that's just how open the competition is, you know. So it makes it fun because it pushes the guys that, you know, have the inside track to stay hungry. But at the same time, the guys that are knocking on the door, you know, like the Bradleys, the Blairs, the Shipley, it says, man, I kind of have a chance to make this team if I have a good spring training. I mean, there's no set in stone.
And Hark, a guy you had in New York, we brought him over last year in a deal. We've talked about him. Didn't win a ball game, but pitched well. He's got his name into the mix, Vidal Nuno.
Yeah, he's got just as good a chance as anybody else. I mean,
and you were the guy that said, "Hey, look at this Nuno guy, right? I had him in New York."
I actually got a call, you know, from I think it was Tony. Tony asked me, he said, "Do you like this guy?" I said, "Yeah," you know, and I said, "Yeah, I've always liked Nuno because he works quick and he pounds his own." I mean, Nuno's – I mean, he's just a guy who's – he's got to learn – he's got so many pitches. He's just got to learn how to use them all, you know, and he finally got a consistent chance to get out there and start every fifth day. And you saw him getting a little bit better every time, a little bit better every time. And he's a great offset to a rotation, I mean, because he comes out there and he pounds his own, he works quick.
Yeah, left-hander. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to throw 95, but he goes out there with the toolbox and figures out a way to fix it.
That's it.
Excited about what you got in the bullpen? Coming back and the additions and some of the young kids coming up?
Yeah. I mean, the back end of the bullpen is something that, you know, the Diamondbacks have had a lot of for the last couple of years. I mean, I'm excited about Burgos. I mean, I'm excited about Barrett. I mean, these, you know, you're talking about guys who just dominated down there. I mean,
the minor league numbers for some of these guys are crazy good.
Yeah, yeah. Really, and you know, and
Leconte.
I mean, I'm really excited about Leconte. There's some things we still have to harness, but he's a lefty where we're going to have really good lefties that are going to want to have nothing to do with him because he's slinging that bad boy from
good.
About 95.
Good.
And
so,
from that weird angle
too,
huh?
Yeah. So
almost sidearm.
I mean, he looks like a younger version of Oliver.
And there's always the veteran presence, too. You got all those guys in there.
Yeah.
Oliver Perez and Ziegler and all these guys. I know you got to go because there's a million things going on here, but real quickly on Lopez. He's really caught a lot of people's attention here, hasn't he, Yoan Lopez?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard not to. I mean, his bullpens are veteran-type bullpens. I mean, he's definitely very, very refined for a 22-year-old kid. And I think fans are going to be excited and looking forward to watching him pitch at Chase Field. I mean, his stuff is electric. I mean, and like I said before, competition's open.
Bring the competition. Bring the games on.
When you're standing there watching a guy, let's use Lopez as an example. You're standing there watching him throw a bullpen. It's not like he's throwing to a hitter and we can see tangible results. But when you're standing there just watching him throw to a catcher, what do you see that jumps out at you specifically that you're looking at?
Well, I see that what I look for mainly is like I've said over and over, is repeating a delivery. Mm-hmm. And he repeats a delivery as about as well as any 22-year-old that I've ever seen repeat a delivery. And then you add in really good stuff, and then you're looking at somebody that's, you know, you can throw more at.
Gotcha.
And when you can throw more stuff at, then it's easy for me to come up with a game plan for a game against the Dodgers and say, okay, you're going to do this, 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 and this, and this. And he says, okay, because I'm not really worried about his delivery. So, I mean, he's fun. I mean, he's fun to watch, and he came here to win a job. And if you ask him in Spanish, he'd tell you in Spanish because he doesn't speak anything else.
Muy pronto, right? He said, you can make the team? Yeah, I'll be in the big leagues muy pronto.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to let you get out of here that quickly. Mike, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Governor.
Now, the man who's seen it all.
Now we got the ball, and this is a bat.
The D-backs play-by-play voice since our very first game, and then some.
Now look at, I say look at here.
It's this week's edition of Hey, Governor.
Longtime Diamondback fans will remember September 27th, 2011. Chase Field, game number 161 of a remarkable playoff-bound season. Arizona's opponent, the L.A. Dodgers. The pitching matchup this night, rookie Jared Parker for the D-backs and Hiroki Kuroda for L.A. The Dodgers struck first in the seventh inning with a run, but the Diamondbacks answered back in the bottom of the seventh on an RBI double by Lyle Overbay. Tie score. Through regulation, it was still 1-1. The Dodgers come to bat against Micah Owings in the 10th, and they struck it big, getting five runs on four hits and a 6-1 lead. Owings came into that game with an unblemished 7-0 record out of the Diamondbacks' bullpen. But Diamondback fans remember all too well the 2011 season. It was magical. Come from behind magical and walk off wins magical. They were commonplace. So up come the Diamondbacks in the bottom of the 10th against righty Blake Hawksworth. Willie Bloomquist, Gerardo Parra, both retired. Two quick outs. The Dodgers one out away from a win. Cole Gillespie then hits a ball to first base, but Hawksworth fails to cover the bag, allowing Gillespie to reach safely. Next batter, Miguel Montero, singles to center, sending Gillespie around to third. Chris Young then walks, loading the bases. John McDonald bats for Owings. He reaches on an error by third baseman Aaron Miles. Gillespie scores, and the sacks stay loaded, still with two out. Now the score is 6-2, with the tying run coming to the plate. The Dodgers change pitchers, bringing in hard-throwing right-hander Javi Guerra. He walks Aaron Hill on a 3-2 pitch, making the score 6-3. And now the potential winning run comes to the plate. The Chase Field crowd, what was left of the 25,000 who had been there earlier, suddenly had that belief again. It is going to happen again. Up to the plate, Ryan Roberts. Roberts was having a breakout year. 18 home runs, 61 runs batted in. A big reason the D-backs were heading to the postseason. Here's the stretch and the pitch. Roberts a drive, deep left field. Diamondbacks win! Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? A grand slam by Roberts wins the game, and the Diamondbacks are still alive. You are kidding me! Still alive to possibly host the NLDS versus Milwaukee, something that did not happen. The Brewers ended up with home field advantage. But thanks to Robert's heroics, Micah Owings went from losing his first game of the season to running his record to 8-0. Crazy night, crazy season, 2011, another great moment in Diamondbacks history.
Well, one of the guys, Gubb, that really battled all year long and I thought took tremendous strides and showed that he's a major league pitcher is Chase Anderson. And he's here with us on D-backs Podcast. Thanks for taking the time out.
Thank you guys for having me on here. This is awesome.
What did you learn last year?
You know, I learned getting called up in the first five games. You know, I won, it was 5-0. Just, you know, I got 17 runs one game, and the offense has really picked me up. But I learned that between each start, you have to really kind of find a good work ethic, good routine to take into the next start, because the more consistent you are in between your starts, I feel like the more consistent you're going to be on that day five. Mm-hmm. And that's what every starting pitcher wants to be, is from start one of the season to start 30 or beyond that. You want to be consistent. You know, you're going to have your rough ones. You're going to have your really good ones. But whether the 20 in between, that's going to really make you or break you.
So what did you end up settling on for a routine? Because I know it changed over the course of the year because you get a little tired there in August or so. And then September was good. So did you settle on one thing?
Yeah, I'm a super hard worker. And in between, I kind of calmed down the workouts. I didn't throw as much in between. I would do upper body one day, legs the next day, and just kind of switched off instead of doing total body in between my starts on the days I was supposed to work out. I just kind of spread those workouts, and, you know, it kept me more fresh. And day five, I just felt really good in September. My arm felt better than, like I said, than in April. So that's the goal, is you want to finish stronger than you start.
First big league stars I recall, Kubiski.
Mother's Day.
And you got a win.
Five plus two hits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the, you know, whirlwind of a day. Just, you know, going back to that day, everybody was there, my wife, my mom, mother-in-law, and just it was very special. And, you know, my dad passed away a couple years ago. Just to get that debut and get the opportunity to be in the big leagues, it was a very humbling experience and just something I've dreamed of since I was 5 years old on T-ball field.
Something you'll never forget.
Oh, no, never, ever.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about it. You had all the – you were the king of run support for five starts. I mean, you pitched really well. Yeah. But as you said, they scored 18 runs one game or something. And I think you're averaging like 8.5 runs a game. And then the next four, all losses. It was the opposite. All of a sudden, the run support vanished. What was that roller coaster ride like for you?
You know, the first five games, like you said, was a crazy offensive just burst, which is awesome for our team. And you know, the more runs you score, the you know, easier it is to win games. And then those next four games, I learned the most out of the whole season. It's easy to pitch when you get 10 runs on the board. It's super hard when you only get one or two. And I think if you want to be an elite starter in the game of baseball, you have to learn to, you know, you're not going to get, if you get one or two runs, you got to learn to keep your team in the game and keep the other team from scoring runs. And, you know, the best pitchers in this game do that. And, you know, that's something I've learned last year and hopefully I can carry on to this next year.
Chase, I think one of the things that we come to really like about you, and one of the things my partner talks about, Tom Candiotti, all the time on the radio side, you can't tell if you've got a 5-run lead or if you're down 5 runs, your demeanor on the mound, never your facial expression, your body language just doesn't seem to change. Is that something that's always been with you, or is that something you had to learn?
You know, I think I was born that way, but my dad really emphasized that at a young age. And I played some really competitive high school baseball and then travel baseball, and he would always tell me, you know, when the situation gets out of hand, you really just need to, you know, have that poker face. And at a young age, it's tougher because you're young, yeah, and you're going through those years. And then as you get older, you can kind of, you know yourself better, and you can, you know, when you give up a bomb, you can kind of just look the guy in the straight face and just kind of stay there and stay locked in. And I think that's the hardest thing to do for young pitchers and for, you know, pitchers in this game, is try to stay locked in when you give up a 3-spot, a 4-spot. But if you can stay locked in and minimize the damage for that one inning and then pitch another 5 innings, you have a good chance to win the game.
People know a lot about your dad and your story there and how close you were, and then you lost him a few years ago, and they see you write the initials in the dirt and everything. Tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, about your relationship with your dad. What was he like?
From talking to other people that he worked with on a daily basis when I was younger, and just people just that he ran into, just they called him the hardest working man you've ever seen in your life. He woke up at 6 a.m. and did a full time job at a fiberglass company in Wichita Falls, Texas, from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. Ran a full landscape business in the summertime, which I started to run once I got in high school and could drive my truck. And then in the wintertime, we hauled firewood.
There you go.
Wow.
He was working nonstop, pay the bills, you know, support the family. He was definitely a family man. My parents got divorced when I was 12 years old, and I chose to live with my dad. And, you know, nothing against my mother, but that was probably the best decision I ever made in my life to live with him, because he emphasized work ethic, discipline, you know, stay away from the girls. I mean, I didn't have a girlfriend until I got into college. I was.
Is there time for baseball in there anywhere?
It was baseball and mowing lawns. Yeah.
Well, was he a baseball guy? I mean, was baseball his love?
You know, he would argue this point, but he could barely walk and chew gum. Terrible coordination. But he loved the game. His dad was a huge Cardinals fan. He grew up loving it. You know, he watched the Sandy Koufaxes. He loved Randy Johnson. Nolan Ryan. I grew up aspired to be like Nolan Ryan. Obviously, I'm not the same stature as Nolan, but you can still have that same competitive mentality, because I think pitching's between the ears.
Now, you do have a little bit of that, too, the mentality. Yeah. And you were talking right on the money. You can't tell when you're watching your pitch if you're ahead or behind. I remember talking to you about this one time. I read all this stuff about you as a high school senior. I think it was 3 no-hitters, all this stuff. Unbelievable. But then you told me that the offers for colleges weren't exactly rolling in. What happened there?
You know, I think the only Division I school that offered me out of high school was Texas Tech. And I was ultimately blown away because I had through, I think, 85 innings my senior year, had a 0.42 ERA, had 155 strikeouts. I was leading the state in 4A baseball, and I just had one
division. In Texas, where high school baseball is a big deal.
Oh, yeah. And I was kind of, you know, blown away by that. I got drafted in the 42nd round by the Minnesota Twins. Didn't offer me any money. It was a draft and follow situation. So I chose to just go to junior college and try to get drafted again after 1 year instead of committing to a three-year school because, you know, I wanted to play professional baseball. That was my main goal.
Was there any feedback on why they weren't all lined up to sign this the kid that pitches all these no-hitters? Did you ever find out what was going on there?
You know, the funny thing is I graduated high school probably 6 foot, maybe 5'11", 140 pounds. People thought I was going to fall apart.
Okay.
But what they didn't know is the days I'd start in district, I'd pitch on a Tuesday and play shortstop on Friday. And before the game on Tuesday, I'd mowed 7 yards, then go play a complete game.
Wow.
And my dad just said, you know, you can be as skinny as you want, but you can work as long as you want to because it's in your heart and it's in your mind. What you want to do, you can do it no matter how big you are.
And then you ended up at Oklahoma, right?
I went to Oklahoma after my first junior college season and, you know, was mainly a reliever in college. But I learned a lot during that time at Oklahoma, and I think, you know, I'll definitely finish my degree there. I love the school, obviously.
Yeah, you and Archie.
Yeah. Talk Boomer, a little Sooners,
Boomer Sooner.
Baseball and football. How about all the competition in camp here this spring? I mean, you guys are loaded.
I mean, we got a lot of pitching now, which I think is really good for this organization. I mean, because you see, you know, when guys go down, you need to have guys that can come step and, you know, and keep going. Because obviously baseball over a long season, you're going to have injuries, you know, and you hope it's not yourself or anybody, but that's just the name of the game. And we have, I think we have, you know, if Hellickson and Coleman are make those two spots, we got three spots for 10 guys competing. So I think that's really good. It's a healthy thing for our organization overall to have the depth. And, you know, I'm just going to do the best I can to compete and hopefully win one of those spots.
Now, you were a 9-game winner last year as a rookie. The two guys they talk about right now are Coleman and Hellickson in the rotation. You're competing with probably 12, 13 other guys. But I would think that everybody sees the possibility of three open spots in that rotation, which is really going to make things interesting in these spring games. Don't you agree?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I think it's going to come down to the guys who look the best when the camp's over with, who they think can be in the rotation and stay in the rotation all season. And for me, it's just to stay consistent with my work ethic, do the best I can to control my own actions. You know, hopefully the chips fall into place and, you know, I get one of those spots. I
mean, nothing is given here. Nothing is given in life, let alone in the major leagues. But do you feel like a guy that has a little equity here based on what you did last year versus so many new guys who haven't been here?
Yeah, I think there's something you can't replace in this game, and that's experience. You know, I've almost had a whole season under my belt, and I definitely, from that one season, I've learned a lot, actually. And you can't replace it with a guy coming up that hasn't had that opportunity to, you know, get that, to gain that experience. And but for me, I take it as like I've never pitched in the big leagues. Every year, I have to prove myself, I have to earn a spot, I have to compete. And I think if I do that, I can get a spot. But ultimately, my whole life, nothing has been given to me. Obviously, like you said, in college, there was only one college coming after me out of high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think looking back is like I'm very grateful for those things that didn't come my way and weren't handed to me. And earning everything in life, I think you appreciate it a lot more.
Now, Miguel Montero is gone. It's basically a whole new catching core. Tuffy comes back from a season where he was a backup. Great defensively. The offense, you know, I think Tuffy would be okay. But there are a lot of new catchers down there. How important is it to get in line with what they want you to do and what you want to do over the course of these spring games, work with these young kids?
Yeah, I've thrown to Oscar Hernandez once, Pete O'Brien once, Tuffy once, Lawley once, Gerald Laird once.
Does that make it hard? Because it's a different guy every time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it makes it hard. I just think they have to learn you. Tuffy obviously knows me the best. I threw to him in AAA in 2012 or 13, and then last year in the big leagues, which I love throwing to Tuffy. He's always on the same page as me. He knows me really well, what I want to do to hitters, how I like to pitch, and that's that communication thing. I think if you have more communication, no matter if the catcher's new to you or old to you, that's the key to, you know, having a successful game plan, executing it, and then, you know, obviously winning the baseball game.
And I don't think fans realize how important a catcher can be to a pitcher.
Oh, they make
like
us look good.
Like you said, on the same page.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Was Miggy your guy? I'm trying to remember. Was Miggy the guy on Mother's Day in Chicago for you?
Yeah, he was my first guy.
Was there any moment, did he tell you anything that stood out? Did he go, okay, kid, I'll get you through this, anything like that?
We were going over the scouting report in the locker room before we got. He goes, you know, just kind of follow my lead, and if you see something, just, you know, shake me off. But just, you know, I know these guys, and, you know, let's go have a good time. It's your major league debut. Just don't hold anything back. Enjoy it. Soak it up. So that was great advice, obviously.
Are the guys talking, and it's been mainly the pitchers, although the hitters have been hanging around, but they're here now. Are you guys talking about, hey, you know, we're not getting any kind of respect, or you just thinking, that's fine. You know, let nobody talk about the Diamondbacks and we'll surprise some teams.
Yeah, I think that for us, I mean, for me, that's been my whole life, has been the underdog, under the radar. Even in minor league baseball, been under the radar. Never really was a big prospect, you know, maybe on the border of being a prospect, but looking back, I'm grateful for that. I mean, guys that, you know, get all those expectations and it's put on them, and it can be pressure you put on yourself that it's unneeded at times, and you can't perform to the level that you know you can't perform. So we have a really good team. We got a lot of young talent. We got Trumbo, Goldie, Tomas, and we got some bats in that lineup. And shoot, I mean, I could just go down the list. You got Aaron Hill. You got Jake Lamb.
Owings,
I mean,
coming back.
Owings,
Pollock.
Yeah, Pollock, I mean,
they're all out there hitting right now, in fact.
Yeah, Pollock could have been, if you want to get hurt, possibly an all-star last year.
Stay away from the injuries offensively. I think this team could be pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Well, as you've told us, you've had success everywhere you've been, and you've fought for it, and there's no reason to think that you won't have even more in 2015. It was great to talk to you. Thanks for stopping
by. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
We're ready to smack you over the head with some serious analytics.
Thermodynamics, hypermathematics.
Like a wrestler with a folding chair.
Lay it the smack it down.
It's go time for Sabermetric Smackdown.
Sabermetric Smackdown. You're saying, hold on, I thought we'd chilled that
on,
for a
hold on, I
while.
Thought we chilled that for
there
a while.
There you go. Well, it's on hiatus. But at least until the regular season begins, do want to quickly remind the listeners, as we did last week, about a great event for all baseball fans coming up right here in the Valley, March 12th through the 14th, a couple of weeks away here. The annual Sabre Analytics Conference. It's at the Hyatt Regency in Phoenix. This is the Society for American Baseball Research, Sabre. One of the highlights of their calendar, their analytics conference, open to all fans. Now, you do have to pay. But it's a three-day event. It's a great experience for baseball fans, guest speakers, research presentations, panels. It does cost $400 if you're a Sabre member, $500 if you're not. Students do get a nice break on the fee along with a free one-year Sabre membership. You can sign up at sabre.org, S-A-B-R.org. Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart from the D-backs will be two of the featured speakers and panelists.
Kurt Schilling.
Brian Kenny from MLB Network, a lot of the staff from Baseball Tonight on ESPN will be there. The Sabre Analytics Conference, the Hyatt Regency in Phoenix, March 12, 13, and 14. A great event for baseball fans, and a reminder, it's coming a couple of weeks, so sign up at sabre.org. I know Leo has mentioned that he wants to go to heckle. You're going to be in the back row heckling people?
I figured that would be my role that I'm best suited for, since that's what was my role here on SmackDown.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It'll be interesting with Tony and Dave there.
Yeah.
They've taken a lot of heat about their position.
But they're going to the conference.
They're going to the conference. They're very involved, and people have no idea. I know they have no idea about how analytically inclined the organization really is and where they're going with that under Ed Lewis. So it'll be good to have them there. Guys, that's a show. We had a great show, two great guests.
A lot of pitching, really well. Pitching's the story in this Diamondback camp. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
There is a ton of it. And it's a lot of fun to watch them come out here. So come on out to Salt River Fields and Talking Stick. The game starts next week. Remember, individual tickets for Diamondbacks regular season games are on sale right now. They went on sale last Friday. You can purchase tickets at the Chase Field box office or do so online, dbacks.com/tickets. You can also order by phone, 602-514-8400.
Candy and I'll have the first broadcast a week. Yep. It'll be on the 3rd, March 3rd, here at Salt River Field. We're going to do the show from the booth prior to that. And Leo, you're telling me it's a later start.
The 3 o'clock start, and then we got webcast Wednesday and Thursday
live. Are we on 6:20 that day?
Yes, we are. 6:20 for Tuesday against ASU, 3 o'clock. This one will take air. And, we're doing it for we're moving. Like I said, webcast will be Wednesdays and Thursdays. And those are live.
Those are the games on dbacks.com.
I don't know how you guys feel, but it seems that to this point, we were miles away, and now all of a sudden we're here. I mean, the games start for real. You know,
in a week?
That's
so great.
I mean, you got to love it. Because the competition, watching these kids throw in these innings, And as Mike Harkey said, you know, B games.
Having to go to two B games.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, it's
it used to be where late in innings, there were some names you didn't really recognize.
You got no time for that, though.
They'd roll out a guy in the seventh inning, and you're no searching the through back. The media guide. Who's this guy? But not this year. Every inning is going to matter to these guys.
And that's
going to
make it fun, I think, for the fans to come on out.
So come on out. Spring training tickets for games here at Salt River going fast. As Leo mentioned, March 3rd, Tuesday, Arizona State, that's the first game against the Sun Devils. Then the Cactus League opener is the next day, Wednesday, March 4. That's a 1:10 start against the Rockies. You can follow the Arizona Diamondbacks on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the whole thing. Follow this show on the Twitter at D-backs Podcast. You'll get links to all our shows, some photos, behind-the-scenes photos of Leo in the umpire's dressing room, men's room here, with his equipment right next to the sinks, which is great. I bet one's going to be happier to get to the radio booth than you.
Well, there's a lot of amenities here. The view's going to improve.
They don't have talcum powder.
Got mouthwash right behind him. Yeah.
Some cologne.
I shave in between guests.
It's all the stuff that you used to go into those old barber shops, and they'd have the talcum powder and the cologne. Leo's got all that right over there. So that's coming up. D-backs podcast brought to you by Beverages by Hoffman, Martin Paints, Martin Paints and Anxious Paints, and Matzahs by Streitz. Back next week, episode 12 for the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte, and the incomparable Leo Gilmartin. I'm Steve Berthew, and we will talk to you again next week from the radio booth here at the ballpark as the Cactus League season begins. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.